control freaks of the world, let go. You'll feel better. So welcome to episode 9 of Rogue Startups with Craig and Dave. We are here today to talk a little bit about Craig's new, well, I don't want to spoil the surprise too much, but his Minister of Finance, also known as his wife, has authorized him to make a purchase. And this is a very exciting time, having gone through this a couple times myself. So Craig and I were going to discuss today sort of what is going on in his world and what he's thinking about for the purchase and some possible targets to acquire. So Craig, let's talk about what happened here recently. This is interesting.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I'm super excited about it. I have been talking about it for a while. You know, I purchased your book a few months ago and got through it. And there's a ton of great information in there for anyone who's looking to get kind of a good base of knowledge on what buying a web app or a WordPress plugin or whatnot looks like, particularly on Flippa. And I went through it and have been trolling, you know, the standard type sites for a while now, looking for a good opportunity to make a purchase, and had a near miss a few months ago with what ended up being a scam, actually, but kind of back on the horse now and really taking a hard look at things. And yeah, I got buy-in from my wife on making a big purchase, because we look at this timeline that I've kind of set for myself to say, hey, you know, I really want to be financially independent and have alternate sources of revenue in the next year, pretty much. And I know to do that, I need to work hard on the businesses that I'm developing, but I also probably need to make some strategic purchases. And this is going to be one of those.
Yeah. And 5,000 sounds like a fun, you know, reasonable budget to get started with here. I mean, you're certainly not going to, you know, buy a Yelp clone or something like that for $5,000 or something that's got a lot of revenue, but you've definitely got something to start with here, which was, I mean, you're like 5x what I started with. So that's awesome. You definitely have a lot more leeway than I had to get started.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I mean, I think in the last month, Podcast Motor has proven some traction. So she, one, believes that I know what I'm doing in general with making money on with technology related businesses. But she also has kind of put me on a bit of a leash to say, you can't go spend $30,000. The Flipping Enterprises guys, FE International just put out a listing for a $32,000 listing. And I said, hey, baby, what do you think about buying this site? And, she said, why don't you start with something smaller and we'll kind of go from there. And so she must have, you know, read your book and heard about the stair-step approach too, because she's holding me to it.
Well, you know, there's definitely something to be said for introducing your spouse to increasing levels of risk. And you have to demonstrate that level of risk comes with a certain level of reward and that you're able to execute to it. Now, I mean, certainly the very first purchase I made on Flippa was not $60,000. I eventually got to a point where I was making a $60,000 purchase, but you know, that was years later, and you had to start with execution first and say, all right, well, this is what I'm going to spend. And it was like $1,200. And then you turn around and get something that's making $100 a month. And this doesn't sound like it's much, but there are huge steps to be taken in there, just understanding customer behavior and landing pages, optimizing your sales funnel, creating, you know, incoming traffic. All of these things, you know, start to build on each other as you, you know, take on larger and larger sites. But you have to start somewhere, and you know, you're not going to start by buying the largest site possible, because you're going to be drowning in so many different things. You know, for example, customer support, that, you know, that's something that can be a huge time suck when you get an existing site that has existing customers and revenue, especially if the existing owner has not done a great job of support and taking care of people in general. So you might have, you know, you might inherit 2,000 pissed off customers,
right?
And that's a tough thing to get started with. So yeah. You had mentioned just a minute ago, Craig, about getting scammed. I'm curious to know what actually happened there.
Yeah, so I was looking at a site that offered essentially a productized service, and it was to do explainer videos. And the listing was on Flippa, and I did some back and forth with the seller over through the Flippa portal, and they answered a lot of the questions that I have. I verified their analytics. They sent a recent snapshot of their, I think, PayPal account. Which is probably one of my errors in judgment is I didn't have them do a live video walkthrough. They just sent a recent updated screenshot from the listing that they had, the snapshot that they had on the listing. So that's probably a place
where
it fell short a little bit in my due diligence. But they did give me access to their Google Analytics, and so I was able to see that real time. And the analytics were there, but what really came up short is we did go through escrow.com, and I think the site sold for $600 or something, $700. And escrow.com actually flagged the account as fraudulent because there were several escrow.com usernames coming from the same IP address.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a red flag.
Yep. And so they said, whoa, hang on. Okay, we'll send you your money back. This looks fraudulent, and so that's pretty much where it stopped. So I had already sent the money. Big lesson there is, one, get some real-time communication with a seller instead of just messaging through something like Flippa or wherever, but also to definitely use an escrow service.
Yes, and in fact, in my book, I'm not quite so hip on using escrow services for what I would call, sub $1,000 transactions. But I'm so glad to hear that you actually used escrow.com because it completely saved your bacon here. I might have been a little more cavalier and totally lost $600 on that exact transaction. So yep. Kudos to you for actually using some caution on that one there, because it totally saved you in this case. And bummer on the failed transaction. But, that's part of the game, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it was a little fortuitous that it did happen, because if I would have gotten just scammed out of $700, then there's no way that I myself would want to go through this again, and I know my wife wouldn't be up for me doing it again. She's like, "Well, you're just going to lose another $600 or $700 on this. You don't know what you're doing." I mean, she would never say that, obviously, but a bad taste in your mouth with your first experience probably doesn't set you up for doing it again. Either in completing the transaction well, but also in having the app or the website be successful after the transaction. I think that's a big part of it is, get the deal done, but then get it done to set yourself up the right way too.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to build some confidence there with your spouse, or you're just not going to make it to the next deal at all.
Yeah.
And there's lots of points of confidence that you have to build. It isn't just a single one. That's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So
I'm glad to hear you didn't lose your shirt on that one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, so that's kind of where I am. And then, looking to the present, I'm looking on Flippa and, looking at FE International, which is a higher price point. I don't know that I can get something on FE International for what my current price point is. And then the other two websites that I look at are, Latonus. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Latonus.com, which seems to be sort of somewhere.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. So actually Rob recommended it. It seems to be somewhere in between something like Flippa and FE International. And then the other one are the Empire Flippers. So those guys have
Empire Flippers. Yeah.
Yeah. So Justin and Joe, those guys have a lot more affiliate and AdSense sites as opposed to what I would really like to buy is, a real digital asset, whether that be an app or a course or a book or a something that is a thing that I can sell.
Yeah, that there was definitely a time when the affiliate sites were much more interesting to me in general, and far more profitable as well. I've had several of AdSense-based sites and affiliate sites, and I was successful with them. In fact, that one of those was my $60,000 purchase, and it worked like gangbusters for a while because it was a very specialized college financial aid niche. And the guy who actually wrote the sites, I purchased multiple sites from him. He was a financial aid expert. He worked for University of Arizona or ASU. I forget which of the two. Anyway, he was in their financial aid office. So this guy like knew the financial aid thing in and out, and he wrote a ton of content. So it was like having his own, you know, this was in the days before they started talking about content marketing, but this guy like had it wired. It was just a beautiful, beautiful site. And the early days of Panda and Penguin came along and it started making me nervous. And I had had the site for a year, 18 months. I don't remember exactly how long it was. I'd have to go back and look. But Google's updates just started making me think like, okay, well, what's going to happen to this site in a year, 2 years? You know, Google doesn't seem to stop on these updates.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and sold it, and I was so glad that I did, because afterwards, probably about 9 to 12 months after I sold it, I noticed just from some compete.com statistics, it looked like the sites took a hit. And I was like, wow, boy, totally dodged a bullet on that one. So, you know, avoiding affiliate income sites. And I know that Justin and Joe work really hard on building those sites over there. But I think, you know, that what they're focusing on these days is not certainly something that interests me as much as it used to. And it may not be as solid of a product as it used to be and something that's easy to make money on anymore. So, you know, I think heading to a solid digital asset is definitely a reasonable strategy there.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, you even look at what their business model is now. It's not building those websites, right? Because if that was still as profitable as ever, that's what they would be doing. And they've turned into a, you know, a digital brokerage, essentially.
And right, which kind of tells you exactly where the market is heading, right?
Yeah, yeah, instead of just building out 1,000 websites.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it's
the market has changed.
Yep, for sure. So, yeah, so that's kind of where I am. I think, you know, just in the now, at least, the biggest problem that I have or think I'll have is actually finding a site that meets my price point and sells something. It doesn't even have to be, you know, making the big bucks or anything, but I just don't find anything that that is selling a completed WordPress plugin or a, you know, whatever it might be. I don't see anything for sale that's kind of already done. So that's a little troublesome, but you know, I'm going to be patient, but I think, you know, if you have any suggestions or if the listeners certainly have any suggestions of things that they know or see for sale that are a real digital product, I think that's probably my next step, is finding a good opportunity and some help with where to look.
Yeah. You know, you're hitting all of the major high points there. And certainly for your price point, I think you're going to have a harder time with like FE International or We Sell Websites or Latona's, because they're all in the five figures and up, 5 to 7 figures, I've noticed. It very much depends on what the sale is, but they pretty much focus exclusively on more established businesses with full revenue generating assets, longer histories, that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're spending a lot of time on those, which I suspect you're not, because, you know, I'm on some of those email lists and, you know, they just don't send me that much that often. And I'm not sure if that's because of the listing rate or because of the interest that I've expressed in the past, but I think it's the listing rate. I just don't think there are that many businesses like those out there anymore. And you kind of have to be super patient just to even get one of those kind of businesses.
Yeah.
But with Flippa, it's even more so, because you just have to play the waiting game and, you know, look at listings and check the RSS feeds and have saved searches and check, you know, when something comes up, you just go check it real quick. If it looks good, you start doing your due diligence, start a conversation with the seller and hope that it goes well. And, you know, if there's a red flag that comes up, you see if it's something that can be worked around. And if it's not, you move on to the next one. You know, it's not.
Right.
It's not rocket science at that point, but it is definitely a patience game. And so I've had conversations with a lot of people that get started out, and, you know, the first month is like the month of enthusiasm, let's call it.
Right.
Where they're really excited. you know, they've got this grand vision and they're into the searches and they're telling me all these things that they're looking for. And I'm like, great, keep at it. You got the right attitude. You're going to hit it. And then month two is where a lot of people start dropping out and they're like, man, this sucks. It's the same shit over and over. It's like, yeah,
yep.
That flip is a huge pile of garbage. You're sorting through it every day.
Yeah.
And that can be really frustrating. I totally get that. I've done that for months on end. And, you know, by month three, you know, only the really persistent people are hanging on at that point because it just gets so discouraging. After 60 days of going through that every day, and that's assuming that you're doing it even on the weekends, but let's just say you're doing it on the weekdays. So that's 40 days of wading through garbage. How can that not discourage you, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just like, shoot me in the head now. There's nothing out here. And it just feels like nothing's ever going to come and there's nothing available. And Dave must have been a complete liar and he just got lucky. And it's not true. It just takes more time, more patience. I know other people that have stuck with it for 3 to 6 months, and sometime either in that range or after that range, something pops and they're like, oh, wow, hey, I finally got this. And, you know, something happened. But it really does take that patience. That's what separates the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. It's good to hear and it's bad to hear, I guess. I would have loved to hear, oh, well, you should just check out this. They have great things for sale all the time. But it's good to hear that I'm doing the right things at least.
Yeah, you know, if there was a magic bullet, believe me, I would have really enjoyed that in the first couple of years because that slog is really rough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It seems like it, and I understand what the Empire Flippers guys are doing is, you know, that there's room for a mid-tier marketplace for sure, and I think the problem probably is it's not that the marketplace isn't there. So I think something like Flippa could support it, but there's not a lot of people probably that are looking to sell those apps that have a lot of potential and could scale and haven't already burned those bridges with customers or whatnot. But I would just suppose that it's just not a lot of stuff for sale is the limiting factor.
Right. It seems like there's kind of like two inflection points of business at that point. You've got the startup where they're trying to get the actual business off the ground, and a lot of people just, you know, fail to launch or explode on the pad. But then once somebody actually gets off the pad, it seems like there isn't kind of a middle ground. If they can get off the pad and get moving, if it doesn't explode like 10 feet off the ground, they're going to make it, you know, into some kind of an orbital pattern, going for the rocket analogy here. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for something that's like, you know, at 30,000 feet where your 747s are flying, there just aren't a lot of rockets passing through that layer. You're going to find them all, you know, the satellites are all up in the atmosphere or they're scattered in little tiny metal chunks on the ground.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why it seems like I see a lot of the startup stuff where people are replicating a lot of the garbage sites trying to make money on, you know, little storefront facades that are all affiliate plays. And they say, oh, it just needs marketing. It's like, well, it needs a lot more than that at this point. You basically have nothing and you've just taken a template and slapped it up on Flippa and tried to charge $600 for it.
Right, right.
But actually building a business is a big deal, and that's why you can't find many of those larger ones or even the middle ones at all.
So, yeah, and I think in general what I have in my mind for a plan is, yeah, that 3 or 6 months, stick with it. It's been a couple months, and I've been looking, you know, I've been keeping my eye on the RSS feed, and they send the emails when new listings come up. But if, you know, 6 months comes and I don't have something, then I need to start thinking about putting that money to work in creating something. And that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I kind of know that there's a time on this where, you know, it's like looking for a house, right? If the house you want doesn't exist for $250,000, then it doesn't exist. It's not like it's going to come on the market tomorrow, and I'll have to adjust my expectations. But I think there are plenty of things, and it might take a little bit different form than what I've been expecting, but I think there are plenty of things, real physical or digital assets out there that I should be able to find. So it's just a matter of finding that right one.
Now, let me ask you a question, Craig. So you've got the $5,000 pot, right? And you know, is there a thought in your mind like, well, if I can't acquire something after X number of months, could I put this into podcast motor and do something with it?
Yeah. Yep. And I sure would take your two cents on this. It's something I've already thought of is, you know, instead of buying something that isn't necessarily aligned with my other existing business, and maybe not something I'm as interested in or passionate about, should I put that money to work? I have a thought of creating a WordPress plugin for podcasters. I have a thought of creating a course on podcasting, and I could put that money to work for either of those, I think, or just for marketing. Yeah.
I was actually thinking of paid user acquisition. Now, that would require some serious market research to figure out, you know, what are the paid terms that would make the most sense? And I wouldn't necessarily even lean towards AdWords. It seems like, you know, I've known several people that have gone the AdWords route. So there's like Dave Collins that spends a lot of time on AdWords. Are you familiar with Dave?
No, huh?
So he's a Brit, and he's come to a couple of microconfs and spoken at great length about Google and SEO and has a lot of insight into AdWords. And he and another Brit by the name of Andy Bryce, who runs Perfect Table Plan, have not had, shall we say, positive things to say about the long-term future of AdWords and the ROI that's coming out of it. And I've seen another discussion over on bootstrap.fm where other people have chimed in on that same thread, not just Andy and Dave, but they've said, you know, hey, I've dumped a lot of money into AdWords and man, it's getting more expensive. And it seems like, you know, things just aren't, I'm not getting as much out as I used to. So, you know, paid acquisition used to be, okay, well, I take a bunch of money, I find the right keywords, I dump that into Google, and the AdWords ads pop up on the pages, the users click. I may be spending a lot per click, but as long as my cost to acquire the customer is less than the value I'm getting out of them, it doesn't matter. It's cool.
Right.
But apparently the costs are going up, the values are going down, and the net result is AdWords ROI is really becoming kind of questionable in a lot of cases. So maybe you want to consider paid acquisition on other channels, and this would require some money to experiment. So you might try, for example, Twitter ads, or LinkedIn might be a reasonable channel. It's hard to say, it kind of depends on your audience, but in your case, it might actually make some sense. Or yeah. Facebook ads. I've tried those with college registration site, and it was very successful there because a lot of them were hanging out, and they would like the page, and they would see the views, and they would come back and visit the site. Not necessarily a win for everybody. I know that, for example, Ruben Gomez used that for BidSketch and wasn't getting like a massive ROI out of Facebook ads. He would do some retargeting, but he wasn't seeing a lot of stuff come back on that. So it really depends on your audience, but you know, with $5,000, if you said, okay, I'm going to take $500 and I'm going to go experiment with these channels and see if I can acquire some customers. So you could split that $500 up between say two of the channels, maybe Twitter and LinkedIn, and try different campaigns on those and see what you get.
Okay. Let me ask you this regarding, the price point, you know, so Podcast Motor for the concierge service is $495 a month. Do you think that paid acquisition would be better suited for a lower price point item, or do you think even for like that type of price point that paid acquisition would be okay?
Well, certainly at that price point acquisition, Twitter ads are not that expensive. So you're probably looking at maybe $7 an interaction-ish. So that's pretty cheap for something that could give you a $500 ROI. On one particular customer. So, you know, I'd have to look at the exact cost when I ran my Twitter campaign and what it ran me. I think I spent like $100 on it just testing out to see what kind of interaction I would get for customer support folks. And I got some people going to the website and clicking and signing up. But since I haven't launched SupportVine yet, I can't say whether that's, you know, whether I really got my ROI out of that or not.
Yeah.
But I was getting a fair amount of interaction. So, you know, one thing that you need right now is clearly more customers. So taking $250 to experiment with just customer acquisition in general, and whether you get the $50 customers or the $500 customers, you would definitely get some information out of that that you don't currently have right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if you do happen to find, hey, look, I dropped $250 on Twitter ads and all of a sudden I got two $500 customers or two $300 a month customers, well, that's a major win, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've almost found the holy grail of paid acquisition at that point. Because if you know that that's replicable, then you could just simply drop another $500 into Twitter and get, you know, however many customers that come out of that, you know, to the point where you're starting to get like, you know, $1,000 a month in recurring revenue. So that's, you know, assume that there's a 12-month lifetime on those guys. $300 a month times 12 is $3,600. That well pays for the $500 that you dumped into Twitter at that point.
Yeah, for sure. So that's interesting. So I, along that, the point of advertising, or marketing, I guess. So I have one, full-time paying customer for Podcast Motor. The other customer negotiated a sort of partial payment for the concierge service and then offered an ad spot in their podcast once a month, which works great for everybody. I think it still covers the cost of when and if I decide to outsource the actual audio editing of the shows. It covers that and then essentially just gets me free advertising on a pretty popular show. So I'll get some, I'll call it free data on that medium of advertising here pretty soon. So that'll be interesting data point along with, I mean, separate obviously from Facebook or Twitter ads, but getting into marketing is a new world for me. So it's going to be cool to see some of these data points coming in.
Yeah. I mean, considering that you're a non-technical founder at this point, you know, spending that money that you've got in marketing the Podcast Motor where, you know, you don't have to do the software build part of it right now. For you, it's more about managing the various aspects of the business. So that might make, you know, more sense than trying to find something on Flippa. I'm not saying stop looking on Flippa, but, you know, maybe dedicate a small chunk of that to see what your marketing gets affected by for Podcast Motor. Because if the end result is just trying to get recurring revenue, Podcast Motor might be a more viable way to do that, given that, you know, Flippa is kind of a wild card. It's almost a lottery ticket, right?
Yeah. Yep, for sure. So that's great. No, that's I'm glad that my thought in that wasn't totally batshit crazy, that it makes sense to spend money on something that's already kind of working. Yeah.
Well, you might still be batshit crazy, but this isn't the crazy part.
So yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. So how we should have done updates at the beginning. How is Support Vine going? I know you're a month or so out still, maybe.
Probably a little bit more than that. So my new developer is working out great. He's hammering through a bunch of issues. You know, I'm kind of at a point where I totally understand where VC funding thinking comes from at this point, because now I'm actually constrained by money. I've never really been constrained by money before. It felt like I was constrained by time or constrained by other things like availability of opportunities when I was looking on Flippa, for example. But now here I have a guy who is willing to work 50, 60 hours a week, he said. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but let's say he would work more than the 30 that I've got him now. If I had the money to actually pay him, I could be making more progress on the app than I am at the moment. So that gives me pause, like, oh, crap, you know, what could I do to sort of shuffle things around? And the answer is I can't actually do that much right this minute because I still have to worry about supporting the other plugins.
Yeah.
So, you know, that constraint is a little bit frustrating, and I can totally see, like, why Josh Pigford of Bare Metrics was probably, you know, sitting similar, based on what I've read in his blog post, he probably was sitting in a similar position, like, you know, I've got this possibility to really take off and go here, but I'm constrained by what I can hire and how much I can pay and so on. And so that may have been where the conversations with Stripe suddenly became really productive with him. And he's like, wow, yeah, I definitely could do this. And this seems like the right person to do it with.
Yeah.
I don't have somebody to have that conversation with, and it's too early, and I'm pre-product and, you know, product market fit and all that good stuff. So there's definitely good progress that's being made on that. So I'm happy there.
That's neat.
In other news, in an attempt to try to free myself from consulting revenue a little bit sooner, I've been banging on the plugins trying to increase their overall take, and I went and increased the prices on Business Directory, and I've added some concierge services on there. But despite the fact that, you know, the customers were saying, hey, you know, this is something that I might pay for, it wasn't like I didn't have 90% of my customers that were saying, yeah, definitely I'll pay for that. And neither of these has sort of moved the needle in terms of my overall monthly revenue, at least not in the 2 months that I've been testing it so far. So I decided to take a slightly different tactic on this, given that I'm a technical guy and I have these guys that are doing WordPress development for me already. I actually went out in the repository and I tried to dig up a plugin that had been abandoned, which is an interesting thing. It's sort of like, it's like Flippa, but it's a lot harder to track somebody down, and there's not necessarily like this active sales thing going on. So I think I sent out pitches to about five or six, and I ended up getting one of them contacting me back, and he just basically was no longer developing it, no longer in the space. I'm not quite ready to announce what the plugin is yet because I haven't actually gone through the whole revamp process. But when I talked with him, I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in taking over your plugin. I own these other two plugins right here. Would you be interested in just turning it over? Just to see what, you know, he said. I was willing to actually go and pay something for it, but he just turned around and said, yeah, sure, it's yours. I'm like, okay. I didn't think it was going to be that easy. Great. Awesome. So sometimes you get what you ask for. And sure enough, he turned it over. And I've been working trying to get it up to speed. It's about 5 years out of date, which is to say that it's pretty old and unfortunately a bit crusty. So one of my developers has gone in and made it so that it actually runs on the current version of WordPress, and added in some other functionality. It used to depend on a bunch of plugins, some of which don't exist anymore, also haven't been updated in 5 years, some of which are newer, but then there's features that are missing on those. So we're trying to clean up those integrations, make it a better experience. And then once I get those things done, then I'll relaunch it.
Gotcha.
So gotcha. I'll be sure to announce that here in a couple of weeks. The idea being that if I can get this thing launched, in my past experience, I've been able to get the WordPress plugins off the ground and probably start building revenue within 3 months. And since I've got this cross-promotional aspect, I've got two other plugins I can use to promote this plugin, each with an audience of about 10,000, and I've got mailing lists. I mean, I can actually drum up support for this pretty fast and maybe add to my revenue more quickly than I could just by banging on the plugins.
Neat. So I have two very selfish questions about that. One is, in terms of monetizing plugins, do you have a free and a premium version of it, or are you selling them? I guess if it's on the repository, there has to be a free version, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're going to be in the WordPress repository, one of their absolute hard and fast rules that you cannot violate is that that plugin must be freely available. And a lot of people that stick in plugins in the repository that, you know, they'll sort of cripple it and they'll put it in the repository and say, hey, look, it's a free plugin. And then people download it and they're like, oh, I can't do anything with this. This plugin sucks. And yeah. They'll harsh rate it. So, when I got my very first plugin, I was very careful about that because I knew that the plugin was very full featured on its own. And then there were add-ons that were not required, but were useful. Mm-hmm. So I kind of made sure I struck that same balance. So that was with the classifieds plugin, the first one I got. And then when I got the business directory, I did the same thing with that because they hadn't really developed it. It was the same author that did both.
Gotcha.
So I developed it along the same model, but I've seen other people that have tried to put in a crippled plugin in the repository and then it just goes down in flames. Yeah. So I'm absolutely doing the same thing here. The plugin was actually fully featured. I found some other plugins that have added some really nice things to their thing their offering. Uh-huh. So I'm going to go and probably replicate some of those same kind of ideas in this particular plugin and start offering those as premium options. But I'm trying to make this as full featured as possible on its own.
Gotcha. For free and then an add-on on top of it?
Yes. Okay. But this particular market happens to be a market that I know that people spend probably more money. So mm-hmm. I noticed that as I went, when I started with classifieds, it seemed like I had a lot of users that were running, let's call them hobby sites. And as a hobby site, you're probably not willing to spend a ton of money on that. And, you know, there were some exceptions. Like I would get, you know, small community newspapers that would come in and say, hey, we want to run a full-fledged classified site. Yeah, we'll totally buy your pro pack, no problem.
Yeah.
But then there were people that were like running, you know, niche dating sites. And, right. they, you know, they might buy a couple of modules. And then there were people that would, like, I think I had a knitter site, somebody that was doing knitters, and they just wanted a classifieds thing so that all the people that were knitting could basically give away yarn to each other. Well, nobody was going to pay for that.
Right.
There just wasn't a lot of money to be had in it. And I get it. You know, I mean, it's kind of fun to see who uses the plugin. But when you see that somebody is a knitter and they're using your plugin, you know, the first thing that doesn't come to your mind is, man, I am so going to get rich off of this, because that is just not going to happen.
Right.
And I'm not trying to knock knitting at all. You know, if there's anybody in the audience as a knitter that I've now offended, I truly apologize. That's not my intent here. But, you know, from a business perspective, it definitely didn't resonate. So when I got the business directory plugin, just that word business in the title kind of changed people's mindset about it. Like, You buy this because you're running a business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noticed that it was easier for me to charge higher prices. It was easier for me to convince people to upgrade to things. It was easier for me to sell new modules, like cross-sell stuff.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, you know, I'll call the classifieds more of a consumer-oriented product, and then business directory is more of a business-oriented product. But even so, it seemed like there's limits to like how much I could really charge. Well, this next market that I'm moving up into is one where people are more accustomed to spending money on these kind of solutions, like they're expensive solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, offering something at a more reasonable price point, but at the same time, more expensive than even what I'm charging Business Directory, means that I've probably got some better revenue potential in here.
Nice.
So that was the motive for doing that.
Yeah, I'm getting a first-hand lesson in hobby versus business with Podcast Motor, because doing a podcast for you and me is, you know, 80% hobby probably right now. I mean, it builds a lot of people's online reputation and general presence, and for a lot of people it stops there. Some people, it's a real business. It is their online presence is their entire business, and so a podcast is an integral part of that. And
oh, sure. Yeah. Like John Lee Dumas, right?
Sure. Yep. And so I'm having to find those people that know that their podcast is their business, or at least a big part of their business, and not someone that says, oh, this is something, you know, fun I do on Tuesday nights and my wife edits it or whatever. So yeah, I'm getting a crash course in finding a problem or a business that people want to spend money on and know is integral to their business. That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a tough thing to define who your audience is. And, you know, sometimes, certainly, like, for example, so let's talk about Business Directory plugin for a second. Over the years, I figured out now that I really have two groups that I'm kind of addressing in there. One of those are like website designers and freelancers who are building websites for clients. So they've been given a task, they've been given a project, and they say, okay, I need a business directory for the site. So they go out and they look at all the different solutions out there, and they compare me to a bunch of other solutions, and then they ultimately decide whether I'm a good fit or not. The other part of the market is people who are building their own business website themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it sounds like the two of those are actually very similar, but I've noticed that the two of them actually have very different mindsets. So like the website designers, I've noticed, probably have slightly higher budgets, and that they're a little less price sensitive. They're more about trying to get feature X for their client. And so, you know, they're more concerned about how complete my solution is, less about how much it costs.
Right.
But the individual business owners are more about, okay, well, how can I manage my costs effectively? And so I want to make sure I have the right stuff, but I don't want to pay too much for it either.
Yeah. Yeah.
And marketing to the two of those is definitely very interesting because you can't use exactly the same message between them. So when I'm talking to somebody, I have to kind of be aware of which of the two of those I'm talking with. And sometimes it's very obvious where somebody will say, well, I'm building site for my client here. Okay, well, that's obviously a freelancer. But if somebody talks about, well, I'm building my site. Oh, okay, well, that's probably the business owner. And mm-hmm. just between the two of them, I can tell which way a conversation might go. It's pretty easy to steer the freelancer into like the combo pack pretty quickly because they're like, well, I just need all the features. Great, give it to me. And some of them will like just buy the multi-site version because they're like, yeah, I got to build this for more than one client. I'm like, cool, great, do it.
Yep. Yep.
But the individual business owner is like, well, do I need this module or do I need this module over here? Well, I only want one payment gateway. Okay, great. Which one should I get? You know, that though, it is slightly different conversation. So yeah, I think you definitely have that segment in podcast motor as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Hey, let me ask you, I actually have one other question on, two questions on finding these plugins. The first is, you said it takes about 3 months to get an outdated plugin up to speed. What does that cost in kind of general terms for your developer?
Oh, gosh, I don't know that I've ever actually tracked that number. I have to go look that up. But all right, so I can tell you some rough ideas here. I'm trying to think right now when I did so it kind of depends on the plugin, first of all, and just exactly how much work you have to dump into it. With AWPCP, it was in pretty bad shape when I got it and it needed some tough love, but I started out actually doing that work myself and then ended up hiring a developer to outsource the support work. And then I had to fire him because he wasn't doing a very good job. And then I ended up hiring a different guy who's the current developer on it now. So that cost structure is totally messed up. That's not going to give us a good answer.
Yeah.
I'm sort of talking out loud here or thinking out loud. And for Business Directory, it was a little bit different because when I got that one, A, I knew kind of what shape it was in. B, I knew that my current developer was not in a place to be able to handle it because he was already pretty busy with the one. So I had to hire a new guy right away to start fixing it up and adding features. And he's, you know, in the 20-something an hour range. And he's started working on that full time ever since. But let's say the first 3 months were all about fixing the issues that were going into it. So that's what, you know, he was working 30 hours a week at $20 an hour. So that's $600. So that was like $2,400 a month for 3 months. So that's about $7,500 roughly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The plugin that I just got I don't think it's going to be quite that much because I'm actually splitting the time of my developer at this point. It's the same guy that's doing Business Directory. So he's going to be working some time on Business Directory for support, and it's actually going to be the lion's share of his time because it's still pretty time intensive. But I think he ended up doing 2 to 3 days just to get it running on the current version of WordPress, and he's probably got maybe another week's worth of work to fix those integrations and kind of clean up the workflow. Most of the work in this plugin here is about the marketing site and the documentation and the support, which is kind of more on my shoulders than it is on his. So that's probably like a month's worth of time. I've already put in a week and I've probably got another 3 to go. So just ballpark my time at 100 an hour, you know, and I'm not quite working 40 hours a week on it. Let's say I'm getting 20 hours a week on it. So that's maybe $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's comparable. Let's say it's between $7,000 and $8,000 to revamp a plugin right now.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason I'm asking, obviously, is it might be an acquisition possibility for me. I really hadn't thought of acquiring a abandoned plugin and revamping it. But I think one of the values there is some of the, I don't know what you call it, SEO juice or the ranking juice of having all those previous downloads has to help it versus just starting from scratch.
Yes, it does. So one of the things that, you know, maybe we could do a whole podcast on this sometime, but looking for an abandoned WordPress plugin is kind of a little bit of an art in itself, because you want to balance a lot of things in there. So you want something that maybe is a fixer-upper. So that could mean it's got poor reviews, or it doesn't work really well, or it's been, you know, not updated in a long time, something like that. But something that does have a community that's still associated with it. So there's the difference between WordPress just added a statistic on their download pages now that, thank goodness they added, because previously nobody really knew how many, quote, active users you had in a plugin. And it was something I actually physically added into Business Directory, and I made people opt into it so that I could get an idea of what my total active audience was. And it would also tell me things like, you know, what PHP versions do they have installed? Who's on the latest version of WordPress? What versions of WordPress are out there in the wild that people are using? These are things that you couldn't get out of the repository. And they were important because I needed to test against this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, now that they've added this active users, so my statistics were telling me I had about 6,700 active users in the plugin for Business Directory. Well, as soon as WordPress posted their thing, they said, well, I had a 10,000 plus. So that means I had between 10,000 and 11,000. And then I went and saw their math and how they broke it up between the versions. And I was sort of looking at only the more recent versions because I didn't have this code in all versions of Business Directory. So I looked at my numbers and they actually lined up pretty closely to what WordPress had. So if I looked at all my active versions where I had this phone home thing in, and then considered that probably not everybody opted into it, that my 6,700 lined up with that 10,000 actually pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And that became, you know, a useful statistic to figure out. All right, so this active installs is actually a pretty accurate number. So now if I'm looking for an abandoned plugin, you can actually go and look, you know, are there 20 active installs or there are 1,000 active installs? So even an abandoned plugin with 1,000 active installs has slightly better rankings inside of WordPress for search than a brand new plugin. Even if it's crap, even if it's abandoned, even if it has poor ratings. Isn't that weird?
Interesting. Yeah, for sure. That's super weird. So, I mean, it's a little intuitive because I know downloads, probably reviews as well, are a big part of their search algorithm. But interesting.
But you would think that something that is, you know, and don't get me wrong, the update date also factors into it. But there's definitely some black mojo magic going on with WordPress searches, that it's some combination of recency of rating, recency of update, total number of downloads, total rating of the plugin, and keywords that they use to match and order the plugins that show up. Mm-hmm. So if you get a crap plugin that you can fix the reviews on that still has a reasonable community and a history of downloads, say in the thousands, you can actually rank more quickly than if you put a brand new plugin in the repository.
Man, I am super jazzed about that approach. I can't wait to hear how it turns out for you.
Well, in a few weeks, once I get this actually launched, I will publicly announce it here on the podcast. But I'm getting close. It's just not quite there yet. There's no point in sending traffic to a site that's, you know, half baked.
For sure, for sure.
I should get one of those. I should get one of those 1997 GeoCities, you know, under construction, you know, animated GIFs on the front of the page, just for, you know, good effect at this point.
There you go. That'd be awesome. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, getting back to your $5,000 in podcast motor, you know, if you've got this $5,000 budget, maybe looking at abandoned plugins is another way to go.
Yeah.
So I can send you some specific links on how to do that. There's a site called searchwpplugins.com, and I'll have to double check to make sure I got that right. But that one allows you to search basically the same contents of the WordPress repository, but it gives you different ways to sort and rank them. So, for example, you can say, show me things that haven't, you know, been updated in a long time, or their last update date was more than a year ago. So this helps you find abandoned plugins within certain niches. And then you can narrow that down by keyword, and you can, you know, order it by download so that you're not looking at something that was abandoned and had 3 downloads versus something that was abandoned and had 25,000 downloads.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's some really nice ways to go and find plugins in there. And then once you've found a plugin, the next trick, of course, is to contacting the author and actually getting a response, which can be kind of a pain in the neck. I lucked out because I found the guy's Twitter handle and he was still active on Twitter. So I sent him a message and I said, hey, you know, I see that you were the author of so-and-so plugin. You know, would you like to chat? And he actually responded. But yeah, it was not easy to find that because a lot of people use pseudonyms on there, obviously, or screen names, and those screen names don't translate to Twitter handles that make sense. So,
right,
you know,
right,
it's kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah, yeah.
But hey, you know, you flip is a crapshoot, so why not play two crapshoots at once? Because it doesn't cost anything to play either of them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think, I mean, and I don't know, anecdotally in my mind at least, finding someone through the WordPress repository, I would think would be a little more legit than, you know, like you said, some storefront or, you know, blank kind of website that someone's selling on Flippa, and it might be a little tougher to validate. I mean, in WordPress, the repository has pretty legit data behind it, I think.
In theory, again, screen name can kind of obscure things, and so you never really know who you're dealing with in some cases.
Yeah.
But, you know, the WordPress team can actually try to help you get into contact with somebody, and you know, there's a process about if you wanted to adopt an abandoned plugin. So you try to contact an author, and if that author doesn't respond and you wait some period of time and the plugin is a certain number of years old, there's some magic combination of things in there that you can go and contact the WordPress team and say, I'd like to formally adopt this plugin. I can't get a hold of the author. And then they might repeat some of that process to see if they can get a hold of the author. And if nobody can get a hold of the author, then they might let you adopt it at that point.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Cool. So that's a different angle. I didn't really think about suggesting that. You should try it.
Yeah, I'm going to. I really need to think about the niche, and we should probably have a follow-up episode about this in a month or so, maybe when yours goes live, and maybe I'd have some updates on starting the process from the beginning of, you know, niche selection and whatnot. Good alternative, or, you know, acquisition alternative for sure. For a guy like me who doesn't have the development skills, you know, getting something at least and you know, outsource the development and giving a developer something to go with. I don't know, it might be easier to have kind of a scope and a framework built in already for me, who this would be my first real kind of software product. So interesting.
Right. And if you had some very specific tasks, so let's say you acquired and I don't necessarily suggest that this is the way to go because this might be hard to monetize, but this is the first thing that popped into my head. Let's say you acquired an event calendar plugin, okay? The first thing you might need to do is fix, you know, integration with Google Calendar, for example. Well, you know, that has kind of a well-defined boundary around it. You could use some of maybe that $5,000 budget that you have to go and hire a developer to fix that piece of it while you personally, you know, stand up the WordPress site that's going to promote it and, you know, start trying to go and build the documentation and the support forums and all of that sort of stuff so that you can, you know, those are non-technical things that you would certainly be more than capable of doing at this point. And that's a lot of what I end up spending time on the plugins now, since I try to outsource that development. I don't want to do it myself. Those are ways that, you know, you could actually get that plugin up and running and use that $5,000 kind of differently.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've just in the last 10 days or so really had a huge mindset shift in terms of outsourcing and then spending the little bit of time I do have outside of family and my day job on the things that only I can do or I can do best for sure in my business. And actually this podcast probably will get edited by somebody else. So I've found an editor for Podcast Motor and,
woo-hoo!
Yep. So all of the podcasts, I think, will get edited by somebody. And, that is such, cause each, you know, so we're going to be an hour today, probably that's 3 or 4 hours for me to edit a show. And I found somebody to do it for $40. It's just a no brainer, even for this is, you know, our personal podcast. I have no problem paying someone, you know, $10 an hour or whatever it ends up being. So that's anybody who's out there who is doing a lot of work that someone else can do for not a lot of money, just stop doing it and spend your time doing something that will move your business forward, because trudging around in a medial task is just a waste of time and you're just not going to get anywhere. So,
yes. And let me make a more personal message. So I speak to all other control freaks out there in the world. Outsourcing is one of the hardest things you'll ever do. And once you finally let go, it is so liberating. Once you can finally trust somebody else to get that task done for you and do a reasonable job, maybe it's not perfect, but you have to come up with what is a reasonable threshold, not a this is how good it would be if I did it threshold. I talked at length with Christopher Hawkins about that, because we were both major control freaks and he has a hard time outsourcing. And the first time I did it, I had a major hard time letting go of certain things. And now I feel so much better having somebody else take care of those details and knowing that that's getting done without me having to micromanage it.
Yeah.
You know, control freaks of the world, let go. You'll feel better.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I'm a pretty big control freak myself. And it's got to be very liberating. I'm excited about it. And just a little bit of work I've done. I signed up for Fancy Hands. I don't know if you know Fancy Hands.
You told me about it.
Yep. It's a cool service. I signed up, I think it's $20, maybe it's $30 a month, and you can get 5 tasks done. And I signed up last week and I sent them. My first task was, I want to go into iTunes, and this is some of my outbound marketing for Podcast Monitor. I said, I want the top 20 podcast names, email addresses, or website with contact form, and a brief snippet about what the podcast does in an Excel document in these 3 categories. Of iTunes, you know, podcasts. Man, I got it in like 3 hours.
Nice. And
for essentially, what is that? You know, $6, $8. And so now I haven't done it yet, just I haven't any time. So I've been editing podcasts for the last 2 weeks straight, it seems like. But now that the editing of the podcast is going to somebody else that I'm paying $10 an hour, essentially, I can go and cold email these 30 big name podcasts and, you know, even if I do that 10 times and I land a new customer, it's worth it. So yeah, it's just building that business process. It's a cool experience for me to be going through from the ground up. Yep.
Yeah. Outsourcing is a major productivity multiplier. If you can outsource the things that are not high value or not high touch stuff that you really have to be involved with.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, man, what do you think we call it a day?
I think so. Let's wrap this up here.
Yeah, that was a cool sort of fortuitous transition we had there. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think we might have to reorder some of that for the. Well, I don't know. Maybe we don't reorder it. Maybe it was just a nice stream of consciousness there.
Yeah. I'll take a look at it. I mean, it would be easy to break up, you know, right there with your update. But yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take us out. All right, guys, thanks for listening today. Rogue Startups Podcast, Episode 9. The show notes for this episode can be found at roguestartups.com/episode9. If you're enjoying the show, we sure would appreciate a review in iTunes. Link for that will be in the show notes as well. So, Dave, thanks so much for hopping on today. Another great episode.
Yep, thank you, Craig. And I look forward to hearing more about the next update and what's going on with your 5 grand largesse.
There we go. Put it to work, right?
Exactly.
All right. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
Make it easy.